project that you're going to see today is really the grandchild of an idea pitched from Dr. Kurtz at Cotton Incorporated, and you're going to get to see the father or mother of this project when in the next presentation. But this came about as a result of a student working in my lab, Arun Babu, and unfortunately he can't be here to present his research today. He's getting married, so I guess that's a good enough excuse not to be here. So you have to listen to me present it today. But what we were interested in doing is looking at the abscission rate of some of these different varieties, and I'm going to kind of explain why we're looking at this here in my introduction. First of all, These are very important pests. We've sort of seen ad nauseum, BT and bollworm, and yet we still need control. Many of our acres are sprayed. Dr. Kearns gave a great presentation on that. And the pest that we're focusing on is Helicoverpa, because to my understanding, no Heliophis fluorescens has ever pupated off of BT cotton. So this is really our focal organism that we're keying in on. In North Carolina, we do have a threshold for bollworm. It's an iterative threshold, and very similar to what you saw in Dr. Kern's threshold, we like to focus in on eighth inch or larger larvae. We do that because we feel that this gives scouts and consultants a good feeling for what's a second instar. So we try to ignore eggs and first instars to allow the larva to have a chance to ingest the toxin and then die before we make a treatment decision. Our threshold is iterative in that we recommend multiple scouting trips on a weekly basis. If on the first scouting trip, three of those live larvae are recovered on 100 tissues, we would recommend a spray. If that threshold is not reached, but two are found on two consecutive scouting trips, we recommend a spray. And if one is found on three consecutive scouting trips, we recommend a spray. And we do recommend scouting different fruiting parts of the plant, squares, bowls, and then especially checking underneath bloom tags. So this is how we manage bollworm. Obviously, our threshold is based on insect presence, but scouts and consultants do not ignore injury. And we had a great question from the audience today about how is injury defined. And injury is something that we usually call a hole in the tissue. And then we also look at abscised tissue and call that injury. But this is a very relative term. When you're out there in the field, you can see different patterns of feeding on different plant parts. This is an example from a square, a flower, and a bowl. So we have these different types of tissues out there. In addition, we have different types of injury on that tissue. So there's much more injury going on besides simply abscission or a hole into the bowl. So a hole within the bowl or square itself or the flower is going to vary depending on size. So if you have a small instar larva penetrating the plant, you're going to have a very small hole. If you have a larger insect penetrating the bowl, square, or flower, you're going to have a larger hole. And then sometimes you'll see multiple holes. There may be multiple larvae present, or you may see a small entry hole. The larva develops inside of the tissue, and then you see a larger exit hole. And then we can even break the plant tissue down itself. So on a square, for example, we have the bract, and this is a great example of some bract feeding. We have sepal feeding. You can see in this example, the sepal is almost entirely missing. And this is very often what we see in our BT technology, where the larva will start on the sepals, do a little bit of feeding, and die. And then, of course, we can talk about holes in the tissue itself. And then, of course, as that tissue progresses, that injury remains there. So there's all different types of injury going on. And really what we are interested in is this here, the relationship between injury and tissue abscission, because it's not known. Now, there is a relatively rich history of literature on this. So some of this work was done with some of our cooperators that you're going to see in the next presentation. Dr. Jeff Gore has done quite a bit of work. There's some work from Dr. Stewart out there. So people are aware of this issue. We know that bollworm behaves differently on BT and non-BT cotton. We know that bollworm prefers to feed on different parts of the fruiting tissue as the plant ages, as that tissue ages, and then within the tissue itself. So there's something there, but all the pieces were not put together. So in this presentation, I'm going to describe some research objectives we were interested in. First of all, we were interested in the very simple objective of comparing the abscission rate from a non-BT variety and then three BT varieties. Furthermore, we were interested in comparing the percentage of abscised tissue with the bollworm injury between those varieties. And then really what we were interested in was estimating and comparing the proportion of different injury types on these different varieties. So this was done using small plots, and it would have been a really great design if we could have obtained multiple varieties of each of these. But we just simply couldn't because of the human power required to do the experiment. So we sort of chose placeholders. So we had a single variety that was non-BT, a single variety that was Bolgard 2, a single variety that was Twin Link, and a single variety that was Wide Strike. We monitored bollworm pressure throughout the season so we know how many insects are out there, and we just did that with traditional sampling methods. And then we went in and cleared abscised tissue out of the middle rows of the plots. So we went in on one day and we cleared out in the alley any tissue that was on the ground. We went back 24 hours later and then subsequently collected that tissue, brought it back to the lab, stuck it in a freezer, and then we painstakingly went through each individual tissue and quantified the injury on it. So we would describe the plant part, whether it was a square, a flower, or a bowl. Then we would identify if feeding was present, and then we would measure with calipers and estimation how much of that feeding on each of the tissue type and then the tissue within that tissue type what was there. In addition, we also took degree day measurements, and then we measured how the fruit was developing on the plant so that we could then sort of put all those pieces together in the end. Finally, we collected yield using a mechanical picker. So this is not a complete analysis by any means. We're just sort of putting the information together, but I just wanted to present what we have here today, and so you get an idea of what we're going for, and maybe get some ideas from you if you have any. This is the mean abscission rate, which you can see here on the left, and the percent boll injury, which you can see here on the right, and I apologize for the smallness of the graphs, but you're looking at that over time. I want you to focus your attention on the top two graphs. So these are results from 2014. We have mean abscission rate here on the y-axis and percent boll injury here on the x-axis. And you notice the first thing I want to point out is that the results were sort of as expected. So we would expect that non-BT tissue in the presence of bollworm is going to abscise tissue. And that's, in fact, what we see in this red line here. So we had a distinct peak that correlated with something that we normally expect. In North Carolina, bollworm typically comes in late July, early August, oviposits, then develops on the cotton, and then the tissues are abscising about as they should with the development of those bollworms. And then the different BT varieties obviously had less abscission compared to the non-BT, but that did increase over time. You can see that the tissue abscised a lot quicker on the BT because the larvae were developing quicker on that variety compared to the other varieties. When we look at injury, the injury just being our percent of abscised tissue with bollworm feeding. So that, in this case, you know, I'm not showing the broken down data. I'm just saying, does it have feeding or does it not have feeding? It seems to correspond somewhat with the graph on the left. So we see this increase in bollworm injury with abscised tissue in later August, and that seems to correspond with these peaks of when the tissue's abscising. Now focus your attention on the bottom two graphs down here. These are data from 2015. And you notice that it's a little bit of a different pattern. We have abscission happening around the same time, so this is in middle or late August, but we have abscission rates that are relatively the same in all the different varieties, whether it was BT or non-BT. And then when we look at percent abscised tissue with bollworm feeding, we can see that, again, the pattern is very different and that it's sort of flat and it's not really different between varieties. And this can be explained by a number of things that'll be more apparent as the presentation goes on. First of all, in these plots, bollworm pressure was higher in 2014 and very low in 2015. So if the pest isn't there, we would expect that to have some influence on the abscission rate. And the other thing is that abscission is very complicated in the plant itself. So we had more plant bugs present in the experiment, for example, in 2015. Now, we did our best to manage these with selective insecticides, but we didn't get every plant bug that was out there. And the third thing is environmental conditions. So the plant in 2015 was responding to some very stressful conditions. It was very hot and dry, in this period in August, and it was actually abscising tissue as a result of the environment. So these things were sort of playing into and complicating our experiment, which is why we really want to focus here on the percent of abscised tissue with bollworm feeding. Average lint yield results. If we look at non-BT versus BT varieties, you can see that the BT varieties yielded higher, which is no surprise in the presence of a bollworm. And then in 2015, our yields were all the same, which again should not be a surprise in the absence of bollworm. Okay, this is the percentage of abscised tissue with different bollworm injury in 2014. So we have this broken up by tissue type, and we're not showing the data yet that's the tissue type broken up. So this graph here is the percent of abscised tissue with bract injury, percent of abscised tissue with sepal injury, percent of abscised tissue with boll wall injury, and then percent of abscised tissue with an ovary hole. Interestingly, bollworm seems to feed on the bract, no matter if it's BT or non-BT. I can't exactly explain this blip that we saw at the end of the season. That's twin link. Not quite sure why bollworm was feeding out a lot of twin link bracts at that time. We did not see the same trend in 2015, which is the next slide that I'm going to show. When we look at something like sepal feeding, now we haven't analyzed these statistically, but it looks like there's a little bit more sepal feeding in non-BT compared to BT varieties. We don't see a whole lot of differences with bollworm feeding, but maybe there's something there with a little bit more boll wall feeding with non-BT varieties. And then when we look at ovary hole, there seems to be a pattern much like the sepal pattern where there's more holes, obviously, in the non-BT variety compared to the BT varieties. These results are from 2015. Again, the patterns are a little bit different. Whereas we didn't see differences between bract feeding in 2015 under higher bollworm pressure, we did see more bract feeding in non-BT varieties compared to BT varieties. Sepal patterns were a little bit similar. Again, the same as 2014. We saw more sepal feeding in the non-BT varieties, more boll wall feeding, and more ovary hole in the non-BT varieties compared to the BT varieties. The other part of this experiment that we're doing is we're going to try to correlate cotton fruiting structure diameter with growing degree units. This is a little bit tricky to do because obviously when we're looking at a square, it develops into a flower and a bowl. And so we have to characterize this growth. And when a square begins to flower, the diameter actually decreases a little bit. So the square gets a little bit bigger, the diameter of that square decreases, then it flowers, and then the diameter of that ovary increases over time. And that's something that can be tracked and has a very good correlation with growing degree units. We have those correlations for all of our different varieties. Here's that point at which the square becomes a flower. It has a rapid increase throughout boll growth, and then of course it plateaus out throughout harvest. We're looking for a statistical method right now that we can use to demonstrate that these varieties all have the same growth patterns. We think visually looking at them, they do. Maybe there's a little bit of spread here in the non-BT, but we need to sort of put those together. And then we can correlate growing degree units to the abscission patterns that we're seeing in the field. So that's something that we're working on right now. I'd like to acknowledge Cotton Incorporated for the funding, folks in our lab who helped out with this experiment, and I will take questions if I have time for any.
Yeah, you got time.
That's a great question. I didn't describe that well at all. So some with boll wall feeding, we describe that as a type of feeding where it looks almost as if the bollworm has rasped the side of the boll wall. You see like scarring that's present, but there's no hole. I think Dr. Kearns described it as penetration. There's no penetration. The minute we saw penetration, we called that an ovary hole, and we'd measure the diameter of it. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan. All right, well, roll on to our next speaker.